welcome to this special Christmas episode of Anime Audio Commentary. Today I'll be commenting on episode 1 of Toradora. If you'd like to watch along, then start watching now. You know, Toradora is kind of a melancholy anime for me. You know, it's romance, which isn't usually a genre I go for, and it's kind of like romance as the main focus rather than being a rom-com. You know, I thought it would be neat for this little Christmas thing I'm doing, because I know there was an episode that was Christmas-related. And coincidentally, Toradora is 25 episodes long. Not that it's particularly related to Christmas, you know, I just thought it would be a nice little thing. And already, there is heavy foreshadowing about the romance. Starting to make me feel, man. So already, just from this little bit we've already seen and the visuals from the opening, there's already a pretty clear difference between the two main characters. You know, this guy here is a pretty fastidious person. He's going to great care to clean up. You know, he doesn't like the presence of mold or anything like that. In contrast, the female lead lives in what can only be described as just abject, man, I don't even have a word for it, just squalor, I guess. So I guess it's sort of, I guess a not-so-subtle indication that opposites attract here. Because you just know. You know it's going to happen. So already, we're learning little things here and there. You know, the main character, he has a couple things he really doesn't like. You know, he has a rather unique relationship with his mother. She seems to be completely useless and lazy. And he is paradoxically the responsible person in the household. So it also seems like he has a rather fearsome reputation, despite being, you know, a fairly responsible person. Everybody's treating them as though he's a violent delinquent, when in reality, you know, that's not really true. Oh, the poor guy. You know, those two other kids gave him their wallets as though he was, you know, stealing them, but he just sort of, like, shows up to the lost and found to drop them off. And, like, the guy even remarks on it. It's like, boy, you sure happen to find a lot of wallets. Isn't that suspicious? The poor guy. So despite everybody sort of giving him a wide berth, he at least has a friend. Otherwise, he would have a truly miserable existence. So his friend makes a good point. You know, he doesn't have to prove he's a good person to everyone as long as his friends know the truth. So it seems on top of being pegged as a delinquent, he's also kind of introverted, or at least he's not good at dealing with this girl, whoever she is. She kind of reminds me of Mako from Kill la Kill in a weird sort of way. Oh boy, I can feel trouble brewing. You know, this diminutive girl, she seems to have a similar reputation. Oh dear. Everybody seems to think that this is going to come to blows. So here we go. You know, you basically already know everything you need to know about her from first glance. You know, she's short and diminutive and is rather irritable to make up for it. Man, the teacher just calls him out by name as though he's the type of person who just wouldn't fill out the assignment. Alright, so the plot is thickening a little bit. Taiga seems sick, and the doctor seems to think it's because of the condition of her home. You know, dust around the house. But given how she lives, I'd say it's a fair bit more than dust. Man, I find it interesting that even the teacher seems to buy into his reputation as a delinquent. You know, he starts to, like, gesture and she acts like he's about to strike her. I feel like that's a bit of an overreaction on her part. Alright, so this is where things get interesting. You know, you might be thinking the obvious question. What on earth was Taiga doing in that cupboard? Oh dear. It seems there may have been a case of mistaken identity. So, as is notable of Taiga, she's rather decisive about acting, and indeed prefers to act first and ask questions later. She's really not too good at dealing with people either. So, you know, here we have another example of, I guess, the sort of person Ryuji is. He takes the time to straighten up a classroom, even though he didn't make the mess and it's not really his problem. You know, the fact that everybody just assumes he's the delinquent really is unfortunate. So it seems like there's a lot of misfortune in his life. His father is, no longer among the living, and he didn't seem like a particularly savory person in life, either. I guess it's kind of telling that that's sort of what Ryuji blames his predicament on. His lineage. And that the traits he has inherited from his father continue to dog him in life. Oh, Ryuji. Ryuji, you've screwed the pooch now, dude. You know, obviously, he was just gonna make fun of Taiga a little bit, but, whoops, the letter just popped open, guess I have to read it now. Ha ha ha. Man, you know, nothing good ever really goes on at 2 in the morning. So whether it's his mom partying or a burglar or something, you know, it's in all likelihood not a good thing. Oh dear. Yep, there we go. She's demonstrating again, you know, actions rather than words. And, violent actions at that. One wonders how precisely she's so strong despite being so diminutive. I'd imagine it's like the sort of strength that like a wiry alley cat has. And, you know, she's really playing for keeps here. One would think it would be far easier simply to ask to get the letter back rather than to basically try and kill the guy. You know, this really is a vast overreaction to someone finding out about your crush. You know, these are not the actions of a rational person. One has to wonder how you would get to such a point where this would be considered the best course of action. Oh, that's an interesting plot twist. Oh dear. Now the plot's really getting thick. Man, imagine housing your attacker and feeding her in the early hours of the morning after she attacked you over essentially a misunderstanding. You know, if it's really true she didn't even put the letter in the envelope, then, you know, it's almost like no harm, no foul. So it's also pretty clear, based on what she says, that her diet's pretty poor. She tends to eat a lot of convenience store food, so a real home-cooked meal is probably a very nice change of pace. I also think it's notable that she's acting like he's in the wrong here, because he didn't just hand over his bag. That's an interesting point of view, to say the least. You know, in an interesting sort of way, Toradora almost reminds me of The Taming of the Shrew, the Shakespeare play. And to give a brief rundown, for those of you who are unfamiliar, it's essentially a couple guys are interested in marrying a girl, but her father won't let her get married until his older daughter, who is, shall we say, Taiga-esque, until she gets married. So this, like, drifter comes along, and they get him to try and woo her, and basically, he sort of, I guess, finesses things and, like, proves to her that, like, you know, hey, I do love you, so, like, we need to work together here. We can't be combative. And as a result, they have a very strong marriage, whereas the guy who ends up with the other girl, it's just sort of dull and surface level. But the point here is that the relationship between the characters in The Taming of the Shrew sort of reminds me of the combative way that Ryuji and Taiga interact. You know, because they really get into it. And one has to wonder exactly what that bird's usual self would be like. She doesn't seem like she's particularly healthy. Oh dear. So the plot's really thickening now. You know, Ryuji wants to get her out of the house so his mother doesn't find out. Because obviously that'll open a whole can of worms. But, oh man, Taiga wants advice, so she can't just leave. It seems interesting to me that his insistence that he will actually help her is kind of what gets her to stop and listen to him. You know, that's an interesting question that doesn't really have an answer. How did she get in? You know, it seems to me that they, Ryuji and his mother, live on something above the first floor, so that Taiga got in through the window sort of opens up a question that doesn't really have a good answer. I wonder if she just, like, scaled the wall or what. Wouldn't put it past her. That sort of tenacity is not outside of her character. Wow, I really appreciate how they made Taiga's voice clip shouting into the phone. I've had phone calls like that before. I guess the answer is that they are apparently neighbors. Surely she doesn't mean he's gonna have to make the jump from the balcony. Ooh, Yoji. I think you've gotten yourself into a predicament. I mean, on the one hand, I know he said what he had to say to get her out of his house at 2 a.m. But at the same time, is it really worth it? You know, one instance of explaining what the hell's going on to his mom might be better than an indefinite period of servitude. He also seems to have effectively gotten himself a job as cook. And potentially house cleaner as well. Oh, good lord. That is truly filthy. You know, I found it interesting that she went back to sleep after hounding him to come over with all due haste. Well, I guess it would at least give Ryuji the chance to sort of, like, clean up without her nagging or interceding. That would definitely benefit everyone involved. Man, I really couldn't imagine living like Taiga. Living in absolute squalor like that must be truly awful. And the fact that he managed to clean it up so radically in such a short period of time is nothing short of amazing. I mean, honestly, I feel like it might be easy to just clean the whole place by burning it to the ground. Oh boy, classic Taiga, she takes it as an insult and with poor grace. Yeah, you know, watching this for the first time in a while, at the outset, there really is very little about Taiga that is redeeming. You know, one wonders why Ryuji puts up with her. Alright, well, that's it for this episode. If you've enjoyed it, then by all means, tune in for the next one. Merry Christmas, Space Cowboy.